Sun Sounds would like to take a moment to thank the Green Valley Country Fair White Elephant. For many years, they have shown their support of Sun Sounds with several generous donations. The Green Valley White Elephant supports many fine organizations in southern Arizona, and we are very grateful to be one of them. Through their remarkable efforts, the White Elephant reaches thousands of people every day, positively affecting their lives. Thank you to the fine people at the Green Valley White Elephant from all of us at Sun Sounds.
This is Sun Sounds of Arizona in Tucson, reading to make a difference for you. Stay tuned as we turn the page.
And good morning. This is Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Murray. I'm here with my partner, Bill. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, good morning.
And today is Friday, April 26th. Hard to believe, but it is already 2024. And we're going to, over the next half hour, bring you highlights from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. We'll kick it off with five things to do. Bill's got the first one.
Yes, thanks, Murray. This is something that happened on Wednesday, April 24th, but maybe they'll do another one. Explore Tumacacuri Mission's Courtyard Garden with a Ranger at Roots to Roots Ethnobotany in the Garden. This happened, as I said, on April 24th from 10 to 11 at the Tumacacuri National Historic Park on the frontage road in Tumacacuri, Arizona. Murray?
Yeah, we're bringing you a lot of them that just happened. There is one connect with both former and current military women at the Women Warriors of Green Valley and Saharita Luncheon. That was April 25th, 11:30 to 12:30 at American Legion Post 131 at 249 West Esperanza Boulevard. Again, they may do this again. It's probably a monthly event. The phone number, if you'd like more information, 520-398-6245. Bill?
Yeah. Murray, this also happened yesterday, April 25th. You could go with your favorite poetic pieces and share them with other teens and adults at the Poetry Open Mic. As I say, it was yesterday from 3 to 4:30 at the Saharita Library on West Saharita Road. Information 520-594-5490.
We're going to actually bring you a couple that are still coming up. Find things you didn't know you needed at the Green Valley Farmers Market at Tractor Supply, benefiting the Animal League of Green Valley. That's tomorrow, April 27th, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Tractor Supply, 75 North Abrego Drive in Green Valley. For more information, 520-399-1010. Bill?
Yes, Murray, this is also on Saturday. Enjoy the final concert presentation this year of Music in the Valley, featuring Jamie Reed and Jan Brachtel. This starts at 2 o'clock, so you can go to that farmer's market and then go over to the Valley Presbyterian Church, 2800 South Camino del Sol, Green Valley, for information, 520-625-5023. Murray, what do we got
all
coming
right
up next?
Yeah, the first article I've got is Green Valley AAUW celebrates 50 years. Pardon me. This is written by Sharon Rizak Anderson and Libby Breyer. The Green Valley branch of the American Association of University Women, the acronym AAUW, chartered in 1974, celebrated 50 years of heritage with honor, pride, and courage. On April 16th, State President Becky Gunn addressed the crowd honoring the AAUW legacy while challenging members to continue moving forward on issues that advocate gender equity in education, the workplace, economic equality, leadership, and health care. The AAUW branch mission, to advance gender equity for women and girls through research, education, and advocacy, fulfills this goal each year by providing scholarships for up to six students to attend Pima Community College. The AAUW branch has been in the forefront of many local, state, and national issues through the years. In 1974, with 23 members, AAUW joined the fight to reform mining laws, hosted a program with Speaker Senator Gutierrez addressing Medicaid, and in 1980 led a discussion on the plight of Palestinian refugees. These issues are still pertinent today. During the 2023-2024 year, the branch programs provided insights related to St. Andrew's Children's Clinic, folk music, artificial intelligence, border issues, missing and murdered indigenous people, diversity in a homogeneous community, and Tucson murals. AAUW supports the community in several ways. Among those, placing flags along La Cañada on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, participating in the Rally to End Violence Against Women and Children, celebrating achievements with women around the world on International Women's Day, providing feminine hygiene products to Continental School students so they don't miss school, and making bag lunches for families attending St. Andrew's Children's Clinic. Throughout the month, members meet in interest groups named banned books, mystery readers, fiction and nonfiction book discussions, bon appétit, gourmet dinners, exploring women's culture, needles and more, Ma Young, introduction to opera, and the Out to Lunch Bunch. The Green Valley Branch participates with the state AAUW by sending representatives each year to the fall and spring forums and legislative day held at the Arizona Capitol. The 50-year celebration offered the opportunity to reclaim our heritage by reflecting and celebrating the founding of the American Association of University Women in 1881. Recognizing women were not allowed to attend college in 1836, all of AAUW accomplishments have highlighted the empowerment of women in the past, present, and what's to be achieved in the future. Bill?
Yeah, Murray, here's one of our favorite writers, Corky Simpson, writing Along the Way, Snakes and Vandals Are Back. He writes, saw my first snake of the season the other day, as well as my first graffiti art. I much prefer the snake. Natural predators of the snake include raven, cats, foxes, turkeys, and guinea hens. Common decency is the enemy of graffiti specialists. Snakes hate strong smells such as ammonia, vinegar, smoke, and sulfur. You can buy good old fox urine, and I'm not kidding, which snakes despise at Ace Hardware, Home Depot, Walmart, and Amazon, among other places. A sprinkle of old fox tinkle and bye-bye snakes. Not so sure what keeps graffiti punks away, other than the light of day perhaps, not sure about fox urine. Mr. Snake eats rodents, rabbits, and birds that don't eat them. The raven eats lizards, spiders, beetles, cactus, melons, corn and grain, peanuts, and snakes. No wonder his songs sound like Mr. Raven is about to throw up. I don't know what graffiti artists eat, nor do I care. But I know this, they aren't artists at all. They're more accurately graffiti annoyances, punks, and bad spellers to boot. They stain, blemish, smudge buildings and objects and irritate people who live near the walls and windows, signs, schools, churches, and other palettes used by the graffiti vandal, all in the name of marking territory or claiming to, and selling drugs that ruin young people's lives. The advertising of punk graffiti punks consists of spray can writing that purports to define the boundaries of gang territory where illicit drug deals go down. At the national level, the cost of graffiti removal has been estimated at $15 to $18 billion annually. Rodents, rabbits, birds, snakes, you name it, are far better citizens than so-called artists who specialize in graffiti. God's creatures, snakes for example, even though we're afraid of them, are far better citizens than so-called artists who specialize in graffiti. And scary as they may be, snakes and other critters are incapable of the kind of ugly, malicious destruction that the blot and stain smeared around by graffiti vandals. Murray?
Corky doesn't mince words.
No, he doesn't.
Okay. We're going to go to a letter to the editor entitled Middle East Insanity. The action of Israel by bombing the Iranian consular building in Damascus brings on an act of retaliation by Iran, which fires missiles at Israel. Now we want to see what Israel does to Iran in exacting revenge. What insanity. And the United States steps in because of its unbridled defense of Israel. And who knows where that will lead? More insanity. Instead of making peaceful progress in the Middle East, the chances of the Hamas-Israeli war leading to a wider regional war are escalating. The intransigence of Israel, because of its apartheid policies toward the Palestinians, foregoes any hope of peace in the former Palestine. Things must change. The political philosophy of Zionism in establishing an exclusive Jewish state is not working. The continuous encroaching on and seizure of Palestinian land is not only a deterrent to peace, but it is also a violation of international law. What will it take for all sides to lay down their arms, most supplied by the U.S., and come to the negotiating table before the insanity stops? That letter submitted by Fred Aboud in Green Valley.
Well, here's a feature article entitled Meandering the Mesquite, Dodge City Murder and Manhunt, the Dora Hand Tragedy that Defined Western Justice. This article has a picture of Dora Hand, and it's the fourth in a series on women who shaped the West. The feature article reads, "Early morning on October 8, 1878, two shots rang out. They both penetrated a small wooden dwelling behind the Great Western Hotel in Dodge City, Kansas. Two officers, James Masterson and Wyatt Earp, responded to the scene. They found two women. One, Fanny Garrison, was outside sitting in an alley, emotionally distraught. She pointed inside and sobbed, 'Poor Dora.' The other lay in her bed, dead from the bullet that barely missed Fanny. This tragic event triggered one of the most noted manhunts by West's most celebrated posse. The results would be forever murky and unjust. Dora Hand was a widely known entertainer that traveled the West, regaling audiences with her magical voice and charm. Born in Massachusetts in 1844, Isidore Addie May showed singing promise at an early age. Her parents placed her in the Boston Conservatory of Music, and she would seek further training in Germany. The lure of the West brought her to Missouri and Kansas. She adopted Dora as a stage name and would fall in love with a cavalry officer, Theodore Hand. They married in Hays City, Kansas, in 1871. Dora retired and endured the existence of army life. The loneliness coupled with his infidelities led Dora to junk the Union and return to the theater. She changed her name to Fanny Keenan, and soon was a St. Louis attraction. Dora moved easily through the frontier's most celebrated towns, gathering a considerable following. In 1878, she journeyed to the booming cattle mecca of Dodge. Dodge City Mayor Jim Dog Kelly had seen Dora perform a few years earlier. He made sure she and her traveling companion, Fanny Garrison, were made comfortable. This act of kindness, perhaps an affectionate gesture as well, would cost Dora her life. James Kennedy was the son of a prominent cattleman. His father had partnered with Richard King, whose ranch became a Texas legend, I guess the King Ranch. Young Kennedy was enamored with Dora, who spurned his advances and left on the arm of her benefactor, the mayor. Later, Kelly headed out of Dodge, offered Dora and Fanny his lodging, the ill-fated shack behind the hotel. Kennedy, in a drunken rage, fired shots into the wooden structure, thinking that Dog Kelly was bedded down there. He wheeled his horse around and headed south, not realizing he had killed Dora Hand. The heinous murder of a cherished celebrity deserved a posse of exalted status. It got one. Dodge City delivered with the cream de la cream. Sheriff Bat Masterson, Marshal Charlie Bassett, Wyatt Earp, Bill Duffy, and Bill Tingleham saddled up and followed Kennedy's trail. The five lawmen caught up with the fugitive after a 30-mile chase. Four rounds found their mark, killing Kennedy's mount and disabling him with a shoulder wound. Kennedy was given ample time to heal before the court convened. The trial occurred in the sheriff's office, and given it was a small space, no spectators were allowed, no reporters either. He was found not guilty. Mifflin Kennedy arrived to retrieve his son. Many believe his presence was felt before he arrived from Texas, given his herds were prominent in the annual cattle drives to Dodge. It's no great stretch that Doris Killer got a Chamber of Commerce verdict. After all, what's a woman's life worth when the outcome might deter the financial rewards that come from 20,000 head of Longhorns entering Dodge, not to mention the cowboy wages to be spent there? Unfortunately, Dorahan would no longer entertain them. In December, the city council reduced the police budget. Bassett, Earp, and Masterson had their pay cut in half. Dorahan became a lost footnote in Western history. Her legacy survived mostly because of the intrepid and famous posse that avenged her and became a legend. Not exactly the Old West's best moment. Murray?
That's quite a story, actually.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to this story along the botanical lines. Green Valley Gardeners, The Rose Too Tough to Die by Mary Kidnocker for the Green Valley News. The dense, lush flowers of Lady Banks roses, known in Arizona as tombstone roses, are now finishing their spring bloom period after producing the heaviest crop of blossoms witnessed in many years. Reportedly the largest rose bush in the world, planted in 1885, is located in a nearby tombstone. Over 9 feet tall and covering at least 8,000 square feet, this plant is on the list of National Historic Places. Native to the Orient, vigorous tombstone roses have endured many seasons because of their toughness. Usually growing against a wall or trellis, they send out long, slender branches which quickly sprawl and arch. As they top a wall, they can help screen an unwanted view, add a bit of height to a yard wall to encourage more privacy, or soften the hard appearance of a masonry wall. Evergreen in the mild desert, tombstone rose produces volumes of small flowers, either white or pale yellow. The white-flowered variety surprises with the light scent of sweet violets, but get too close and also notice their prickly thorns. Found throughout the U.S., tombstones are cold-hardy down to 10 degrees Fahrenheit, but during the coldest winters may temporarily lose their leaves. It is preferable to plant those roses from January through spring, keeping the new plants well-watered for the first 3 weeks. Plan to keep them trim and sheared, or they can take on a somewhat wild and formal look very quickly. Because they bloom on old wood, cutting back can sacrifice some flowering. After the bloom period is completed, tombstones are very forgiving of extensive trims, which may be necessary to keep the size and form you want. Untrimmed, these plants can mature at 10 to 20 feet high and 12 to 20 feet wide. Because the branches do not have tendrils for grabbing, they will need to be attached to the wall or trellis as they grow. Tombstone roses like to be watered weekly in summer, every 10 to 14 days in winter. They develop well on drip irrigation, especially if mulch is added to conserve moisture in summer. These roses are considered tough because they are not susceptible to most common rose pests or diseases. Other than occasionally attaching new growth to a wall or trellis and some trimming to keep them in shape, these roses are among the easiest to maintain. If you have an unused trellis or a wide open spot on the yard wall, consider the use of tombstone roses. These lovelies are not quite, but almost, too tough to die. That's the slogan they often talk about the town of Tombstone. And a note here, Mary Kidnocker is a U of A master gardener who lives in the Green Valley area. Bill?
Yeah, Murray, here's an opinion letter by Phil Silvers. entitled Record Set Straight. He writes, "Thank you, Barbara Lowall, for your opinion article in the Arizona Daily Star, setting the record straight on Laura Conover, now a candidate for re-election as Pima County Attorney. I first met Laura Conover at a signature gathering event 4 years ago in Green Valley. In an extended conversation, she romanced me about mutual community connections we might have had. Afterward, I remembered that she was one who wrote the outrageous hit piece against Barbara Lowall's successful 24 years as Pima County Attorney. Curious, I researched her background and found that Conover had zero qualifications to be county attorney. She had never prosecuted one case in her life. I then wrote a letter to the Green Valley News editor endorsing her highly qualified opponent, Jonathan Mosier. Extremely upset, Conover contacted me. How could I possibly do this? She asked. As she then learned, over the years, the U.S. Department of Justice had hired me multiple times as principal investigator on issues related to criminal justice data systems and the training of prosecutors, public defenders, judges, and appellate justices. I also served as on the research faculty at the Texas Criminal Justice Center. As I anticipated, Conover's term has been a painful indictment of Pima County voters' short-sightedness, which seems to have relied mainly on political connections. Reformer Conover drove competent prosecutors from her office and, as Barbara Lowall documents, failed egregiously to protect our citizens. Fortunately, in Mike Jetty, an experienced prosecutor, we voters have a reliable alternative." Murray?
Thank you, Bill. And I'm going to go to this article entitled "Agreement Could End Vulcan Efforts to Build Asphalt Plant." This is written by Green Valley News editor Dan Shearer. The town of Sahuarita will review a proposed development agreement Wednesday that could end efforts by Vulcan Materials to put a hot mix asphalt plant next to Quail Creek. According to the town, the agreement would have Vulcan continue using the land, in quotes, as a guaranteed by a 2000 development agreement, and the company would withdraw its request for a conditional use permit to operate a hot mix asphalt plant. Vulcan would relinquish the right to operate a hot mix asphalt plant there in perpetuity. "This really has been a collaborative approach to what I think is a win-win for all parties," town manager Shane Dilly said Monday evening after the announcement was made. A public meeting is set for next Wednesday at Town Hall. An earlier closed-door executive session will be held at noon and is not open to the public. According to the release, the town and Vulcan engaged in a series of discussions that resulted in an alternative course of action for the community days before the requirement to notify the public of the first public hearing before the Planning and Zoning Commission. John Backer, chairman of the town's Planning and Zoning Commission, said Monday he was unaware of any discussion, but it's a win-win for everybody, then that's great. Alabama-based Vulcan Materials applied for a Type 3 conditional use permit in February 2023. Since then, community organizers, mostly out of Quail Creek, which would be about a half a mile from the edge of the plant, have held petition events opposing the permit and have used the town council's call to the audience to voice opposition. Public hearings were delayed 3 times last year as opposition mounted and the council sought more input on the project. Vulcan did not respond to a request for comment, and Mayor Tom Murphy deferred questions to Dilly and a town spokeswoman. Bill?
Yeah, Murray, here's another opinion letter. It's entitled "Saluting the Colonel." It's by Jim Murray of Green Valley. He writes, "Well, the Green Valley News has hit another home run by publishing the column, Why You and This Election Matter, on page 7 of the April 17th issue by Colonel Roger Ellis, retired. As a 91-year-old Roosevelt Democrat and Navy veteran, I am usually arguing with Air Force Republicans like the Colonel, But in this case, I am really feeling sorry for him. He is faced with a terrible dilemma in wanting to support his party, the party of great men like Abraham Lincoln, but is now faced with only one choice if he votes Republican. That choice is to vote for a man who called a fine man like John McCain a loser, because his jet was shot down, and who said the same of soldiers in the military cemeteries. Nobody is surprised that I not only won't vote for Trump, but more than that, I find it very hard to understand why anyone would. Over the years, I worked hard to support Democrat candidates. I literally wore out a pair of shoes going door to door for George McGovern, who didn't even carry his home state of South Dakota, but he was still a great man. I don't know that most Republicans would say the same of Romney, McCain, and other Republicans who lost, and so would I. As a veteran, I salute you, Colonel Ellis, for airing your views publicly. I can only hope that this will further enhance our debt to you for your lifetime of service to our country. Murray?
All right, and to this letter, Helen's Encounters, Causes and Long-Lasting Effects of Bullying. This written by Helen Russo. This is a post in an ongoing series titled Helen's Encounters on Neighbor, the Green Valley News online social media platform. You can join the conversation at gvnews.nabur.org. The GVR Forum Club on April 17th featured Gary Kidd, author of Real Grit, an informative book about a mass shooting. Kidd spoke of a personal life-lasting struggle and coping with the effects of bullying. Born in Utica, Michigan, his parents ran a dairy and vegetable farm. After his father sold off the cows, Gary worked on the farm. His mother was very meek, but his controlling father frequently compared Gary to his older, more successful brother. His small stature and wearing glasses made him a prime target of severe bullying, especially during the 7th to 12th grades, where he endured hitting, spit in the face, and shoved into lockers. The lingering effects prompted him to research this topic for 10 years before writing Real Grit as his contribution to exposing the dramatic causes and effects of this hostile action. Gary worked 35 years in the health industry before becoming a school bus driver in Scottsdale and more recently in Sahuarita before he quit last year. He witnessed bad behavior from the children on the buses. Still, he seldom could pay full attention to what was happening because he had to remain focused on driving, and the high seats in newer buses blocked his view of the students. He gave the statistic that 69% of students engage in bullying, and it occurs most often in middle school by hateful, mean comments. A bully is a person of any age who seeks to harm, intimidate, physically or verbally assault anyone they deem weak or different. Gary described possible factors, the fractured family unit, the constant exposure and desensitization to violence both in the news, movies, and internet, and the inappropriate speech by role models like sports figures, politicians, Hollywood stars, and parents. He also spoke of the impact social media has on the mental health of children and adolescents. Texting has become the modern cocaine because it promotes less social interaction and can become addictive. Someone in the audience commented that he had received a photo of six family members around a Thanksgiving table, each looking down. They weren't praying, they were texting each other. The bully is often secure and wants to dominate others to make themselves feel powerful. Feelings of depression can darken the lives of both the perpetrator and the victim, leading to immediate and lifelong mental health issues and self-destructive outcomes from that behavior, including substance abuse and suicide. While we can talk about preventive measures like education, advocacy, and peer monitors, the enforcement part seems inadequate. Bullying is a complicated issue to solve. It will take a culture change with accountability from parents, schools, the juvenile system, and social media outlets and role models. And Bill, this is always the quickest half hour of the week for me.
Me too.
It just goes by so fast and we never get to cover everything. But Bill and I have enjoyed bringing you the Green Valley News. We'll be back again Friday. And we do have the Green Valley News show every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. You can also get it on our on-demand podcast. Go to our website, sunsounds.org. Thank you very much for listening. Up next, The Wall Street Journal. Thank you, and stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.